When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This is the FCB Radio Network, home of the best personalities, and where real talk lives. Online at FCBRadio.com. FCB.
Great faces when they drop jaw. Food chain says top dog. We don't listen to y'all, this the outlaws. We don't listen to y'all, this the outlaws. Make them scream out loud like a sound dog. Cause a ruckus in the crowd like a foul ball. Tune in if the charge for the
Welcome to a special edition of The Outlaws. This is Darvio the Kingpin Morrow alongside Robert O'Malley. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheOutlawsRadio. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Outlaws Radio. We are back at CPAC. We were at CPAC in Florida in February. And now we are at CPAC Dallas. We're going to be talking to some interesting folks about some of the things that they're doing, the issues that they are concerned about, and so on and so forth. So I have my illustrious co-host, Robin O'Malley, here with me. We are both exhausted because we got in early this morning, and it was a time change on top of that. So we came in, Robin, and we were feeling good, had good strength and energy and all of that, and then the tiredness, the sleep just decided to come and punch us in the mouth again.
So actually this morning I have like no energy. I didn't even wake up with it, I'm gonna be honest. Like, I'm really just here trying to just at least look somewhat normal and not half dead. But the drive here at first, you know, it started out, it was pretty fun, you know, and I think it was because, you know, we left so earlier with the sun still up. As time went on, it almost felt like we were driving for about 2 days. So, yeah, but happy to be here. This is my first time here in Texas, so I can't wait to sightsee, that's for sure.
Yeah, we're definitely going to do some of that. Yeah, we decided to drive here. And it was cool. I enjoy the drive because you get to see stuff that you haven't seen before. You get to go to places that you haven't been before and, you know, just meet new and different people and all that kind of stuff. So I enjoyed the drive. And it was great, like, at the beginning. And then you really started to feel it as it got later. Now, I woke up feeling pretty good. I had good energy and everything. I was ready to go. And then it just hit me again, like, oh, wait a minute, you did just get in. And I didn't even know, like, I didn't even think about the fact that we live in Eastern time. This is Central. I didn't even think about the fact that they were an hour behind us. So our bodies feel an hour ahead while this is an hour behind. Have you adjusted to that yet? Have you ever been in a different time zone?
I cannot say that I have. No. I haven't, actually, because I'm thinking about it. I mean, no, I really haven't. So this is definitely my first time with the time switch. And, yeah, so actually, you know, I will be going to L.A. In a couple, about a month and a half, about 2 months. So that's also going to, I guess this is like a test run. I don't know.
And that's going to be even more. You're talking 3 hours. So they are 3 hours behind us. So you're going to have to get adjusted to that for real, for real.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, and you know what? I guess, you know, coming here or going to L.A., either way, because I've been off my sleep schedule. You know how it happens, especially with people who have kids. And then over the summer, you tend to mess up your sleep pattern, your sleep schedule, and you're up at all hours of the night that you shouldn't be. And so really coming here and with the time switch, I think that that could help me get back on my sleep schedule. Because technically, you know, I should be going to bed at like 8 o'clock, but I don't, you know, so.
8 o'clock? What are you, an old woman?
I mean, midway.
Well, you're a year younger than me, and I'm not adopting that. All right, stay tuned. We have more to come here from CPAC. We'll be right back.
These days, it seems like everybody's talking, but no one is actually listening to the things they're saying. Critical thinking isn't dead, but it's definitely low on oxygen. Join me, Kira Davis, on Just Listen to Yourself every week as we reason through issues big and small, critique our own ideas, and learn to draw our talking points all the way out to their logical conclusions. Subscribe to Just Listen to Yourself with Kira Davis and FCB Radio Podcast on Apple, on Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin Marshall credit card bill.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Real talk, real conversations. We got the heat.
Giving it real.
Hell yeah.
This is the Outlaws Radio Show.
All right, we have two very special guests here with us at CPAC Dallas. Author of a fascinating book. I'm really interested to talk more and learn more about this story. The author is Jim Peterson. I'll let him introduce himself as well as the subject of the book that you wrote.
My name's Jim Peterson, PhD, and I wrote a book called The Spirit to Soar, about the incredible life of the individual that we're going to introduce to you, and that's Lieutenant Colonel Barry B. Bridger. Lieutenant Colonel Bridger was an orphan, and then he got adopted, and later on he was shot down in Vietnam, was in the Hanoi Hilton and in that area for 6.5 years. He's an incredible human being. So what I did in sort of a unique way of writing a book was to come up with 17 life lessons and tie each of these life lessons to his story. So should you get the book, you'll get some very, very good information. So let me introduce Lieutenant Colonel Bridger.
Well, how can I help you?
Sir, tell us a little bit about your story.
Well, I was born in a home for unwed mothers, Durham, North Carolina, and placed right after my birth into an orphanage. And I grew up in an environment with a bunch of other kids. The older kids of the group took everything. The younger kids had nothing. And it was constant war. And one day, I developed friendship with one kid by the name of Billy. And Billy and I spent our life in the top of a chinaberry tree because the older kids would take anything you might have, run you down, but they wouldn't climb in the top of that chinaberry tree. So we could commit, you know, we could throw them out of the tree up there if they wanted to come up because we were strong as an ox. It's just there are a lot of them. And one day, a car pulls up, and I was fascinated with the car because it would move. And I hadn't seen the inside of a car. I knew nothing about anything. I had never seen a bridge. I'd never seen a swamp. I'd never seen nothing but a bunch of picnic tables with brown and green paint and a bunch of screaming kids and one commode and where everybody threw up. That was my life for about 5 years. And it wasn't fun at all, but except chinaberry tree was a lot of fun. I'm good with that. And then one day, the headmaster walked out to where I was standing under the chinaberry tree with my friend Billy and said, come with me. So I go inside, and she says, this is a Spake family. They want to take you home for the weekend. Would you like to go with them? I could not imagine what a deal that would be. I'd get riding one of those cars and all that stuff, you know. So I was just tickled absolutely pink. Well, I go to the house, and we ended up eating bunny rabbit for supper, which I'd never had any bunny rabbit, but it was really good. And I was up before anybody the next day because I was taking in everything. And I'm looking at a goldfish pond. I've never seen a goldfish pond. I knew what a goldfish was. And I'm looking at it, and this older kid that belongs to them by the name of Ellis walks out and goes over to the pond and grabs a goldfish and starts squeezing the life out of him. I went ballistic. I instinctively knocked him into the goldfish pond and was trying to drown him when his daddy came out. And his daddy grabs me by the scuff of the neck, lifts me up, throws me in his car, drives back to the orphanage, puts me inside, and leaves. And my first venture outside the orphanage did not go well. Well, about... You know, Billy got adopted. One day the car pulled up and took the only friend I had away, and I was now in the chinaberry tree by myself.
The only love that Barry knew ended with Billy being adopted, and he had no idea why that happened. So I think, Darvio, a very interesting story about Barry and about his resolve to be successful is when he was actually shot down. That 75th mission that he was doing, he got shot down, and what occurred during that time. Barry, share a little bit about that.
The day that I was shot down, I was in a flight of four F-4 Phantoms fighter aircraft. We were over top of Hanoi, and we were taking out bridges and railheads and stuff of that nature, typical military targets. And we were carrying a new QRC 160 pod, which would jam the radar signal of the Fansong radar, which was needed to guide the missiles that they fired at our aircraft to guide them into the aircraft. And they told us, when you turn on your QRC 160 pod to protect you, if it doesn't come on, fly up next to one of the other aircraft, and that pod for that aircraft will jam for both of you. When I came home 6.5 years later, they said, do not do that. You'll be detected and shot down. And I thought, damn, thanks a lot. You know, I was detected. I was shot down. It worked perfectly. So anyway, I happened to land in my parachute right beside the cell, right beside the person. Boom. All they had to do was open the door and shoo me in. And I went, I don't think that's good service, but here I am.
So,
Robin, I know you have a question pertaining to that as well, so go right ahead.
Yes. So my question is, how did you stay mentally strong as a prisoner of war?
I'm very confident that my experience in the orphanage played a big role in that. I was nothing but at war all the time as a little 2, 3, 4, 5-year-old boy. And I didn't mind fighting because I knew where I could get away, and that was the China Bear Tree. So I learned, that was like having extra bombs or something, you know. So, and then I...
Well, you were adopted by the Bridgers, and what did they
Well, okay. I can do that. I'm just thinking about examples. I had never seen a boat on water. I had never seen a turtle dove. I'd seen nothing. All it was brown paint, green paint, picnic tables, throw up spot, and Chinaberry tree. That was my world. And I was constantly at war with my environment. And that prepared me to be much easier, in fact, to be in a new home where, for some reason, people wanted to hold me and love me. I sure as hell didn't know what that was all about. You know, I ain't none of that love stuff. You know, I'm going to fight. It took, but my, did I tell them yet the mom story?
No.
When I got adopted by my new family, my mother sat me down and said, now listen very carefully. You grew up in a me-first mentality orphanage. We don't do that here. You're not going to be first here. You're going to be last. Our neighbors will be first. Our friends will be first. Those people we don't even know will be first. That's the way it works. And I was amazed. I never heard such a thing. You know, I kept saying, so I won't be using my Chinaberry tree anymore, I guess, you know. This family was the most amazing family. My new adopted brother had been an aviator in World War II, flying with Barry Goldwater in the hump. I mean, you talk about a history of military service. My gosh. And I was awed by his presence and by all the paraphernalia in his room with props and airplanes and stuff, you know. And to hear someone say, you come last, you don't come first, was exactly what I needed.
That's powerful. That's powerful stuff. Jim, how did you find out about his story and walk me through the process of deciding to write a book?
Sure. Barry and I separated from the Navy as a nuclear submariner and then went into reserves and eventually retired. I went to work for a financial services company and became their director of training about the time that Barry retired as a lieutenant colonel from the Air Force, and he joined the same company. So we got to be good friends. He was amazing. He became our top producer because he told his story to people who were putting money away for the future and protecting their families. So Barry and I worked a lot together to develop things for this company to communicate the need of financial independence. So we've been friends for about 36 years, and about 20 years ago, Barry and I are relaxing after working together one day, and I said, Barry, tell me your story. And Barry started telling me about Vietnam. I said, Barry, I know that story. I've heard it many times. Tell me your life story. And you know, in life, we meet people, we never learn anything about them. And I learned, I had no idea he had been an orphan. I had no idea how he grew up. Nothing about his family, nothing about how he went to school and everything. And I said, Barry, when he finished started telling, he's a great storyteller, by the way. When he finished telling the story, I said, I'm going to write your biography someday. And that's where the book came from. It was, we did it much later, and many, many stories got added in the meantime, but that's how it happened. And when we first, with the first manuscript that we worked on together was all about his biography, and there's something missing. So we had to have a publicist, and he said, I'm not going to represent your book. And I said, well, that's okay. I'll find somebody who will. He said, no, I'm not finished. I'm not going to represent it the way it's currently written. This is a life story. You need to tell it. It's a life story, and that's what it is.
Absolutely. Robin, I know you have a question for Mr. Bridget.
So, yeah, my question is, what is your advice for the younger generation?
Number one, my dad would say, if you're in a hurry, slow down. Number two, if you want to get ahead in life, you got to do the things other people don't want to do. Those two things alone will catapult you to the very top of the other achievers that will be running with you.
My goodness. Wow. Wow, that was powerful. Jim, let everybody know.
My mom said, speak little, say much.
Yes, sir. That's good advice. That's good advice that everybody needs to learn, especially in this day and age. Jim, let everybody know how they can get the book, you know, where they can purchase it and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. The book is available any major bookstore. It's called The Spirit to Soar. You can go to our website and order the book, thespirittosoar.com, and order the book right there. Anyway, we'd love to have you read it. And by the way, one of the feedback that we got when people typically are older who read the book, they come back and buy a bunch of books for the younger generation so they can learn these life lessons that are so important.
Thank you both so much. We have to have him sign the book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we need.
But we'll let him write something.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Handstand took me 4 years to figure out how to do that.
There's a picture of a handstand in the book.
One arm,
and I stay there for about 60 seconds. Either hand. Oh, heck no. I did sets of 50 push-ups, handstand push-ups, and getting in shape. Because I got tortured so bad, and it took me 2 years to get over that. But then I got banned.
By the way, not only could he do it, but he was tortured, and they pulled his arms out of the sockets. So they had ripped all his ligaments and muscles out. So it took 2 years to get the strength back to be able to do that.
I learned to do a handstand. I had to get my shoulders rehabilitated. And it took me 2 years to do that.
Wow. So thank you both so much for spending time with us and sharing this incredible story. Thank you both for your service. And you, sir, you are a national treasure. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Thank you for your service. This has been incredible.
I like your styles. You are very effective and damn well trustworthy. No doubt about that. And it's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is the Outlaws Radio Show.
All right. We have a very special guest with us here at CPAC Dallas, Mark Meckler. He is the president of the Convention of States. We're going to hear a little bit from him about what that is and what that entails, especially considering that it's been in the news recently. So, first of all, welcome to the show. And talk a little bit about what the Convention of States is.
Sure. So Washington, D.C. is broken. We all know that. The question is, what do you do to fix it? And we've been trying to elect good people for my entire lifetime. I'm an old guy. I'm 60 years old. We've sent a lot of good people to Washington, D.C. Hasn't worked out very well. So the question is, why? The answer is, we've broken the structure of our system of government. It's not just about the personnel. Article 5 of the Constitution gives us the power to gather as states, to call a convention, and to propose amendments to the Constitution, specifically to take power away from D.C. and give it back to the people in the states. That's federalism. We need to restore federalism to restore the country.
So Business Insider wrote an article about it recently, attacking it. And I've heard, I'm pretty familiar about the Convention of States concept, heard about it from Mark Levin and others. But some of the criticisms are that this could upend the entire Constitution, that it could lead to things like repealing the First Amendment or repealing the amendment that banned slavery or things like that. Talk a little bit about that. Respond to some of those criticisms.
Yeah, I think the easiest response is that the founders were geniuses about structure. And so the way they built the Convention of States process, it takes 34 states to call. That's two-thirds of states. Then it takes 38 states to ratify anything that comes out of convention. People are scared of convention. It's just a meeting where people make suggestions. And then the states have to ratify. So this is the challenge I put out to folks. If you're worried about it, and there are conservatives that are worried about it, think of the amendment that scares you, the repeal of the First Amendment, the repeal or the amending of the Second Amendment, and then name the 38 states that will ratify that. And the answer is you can't do it. I've literally given my personal email address to millions of people on the air. I'll give it here, mmeckler@cosaction.com. And if you can do that, I'll call you up and have a personal conversation. But I can tell you, I've never gotten an email where somebody can tell me the amendment they're worried about and the 38 states that will ratify it. And I'll give you a specific example. I hear the Second Amendment one all the time. Today, there are 24 states where you can carry your handgun in the state capitol. I know I've done it in most of them personally. 14 states, Dario, where you can actually take an AR, throw it across your back, loaded, and sit in the gallery. I'm not saying that's a good idea, but I'm saying it's legal, right? It only takes 13 states to stop any amendment, to not ratify, not to debate it. And so if you don't think you can find 13 states to stop something like that, that's just kind of a weird fever dream fantasy.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. I don't think there's going to be a majority of states to ratify getting rid of the first or the second or the 13th, 14th, and 15th amendments. Like, that's probably not going to happen. But I think one thing that would help, obviously no one living today has seen a convention of states, right? So a lot of people don't know what the process is. So if this is successful, the idea of a convention of states, walk people through what the process is. What does that look like moving forward after that?
Sure. So we actually, so people know, they can go to our website at conventionofstates.com. We ran a simulated convention in 2016. We're going to do another one in 2023. The process is basically this. 34 states have to pass the same resolution. The resolution says, what is the convention about? And it's limited to those things. So first is anything that would impose term limits on the federal government. That's Congress, but it's also bureaucrats and staffers. And I think we need that as much as term limits on Congress. Second is anything that would impose fiscal restraints. It's a balanced budget amendment, tax caps, spending caps. Federal government has to get its fiscal house in order. And last is anything that would limit the scope, the power, and jurisdiction of the federal government. So that's like, for example, get rid of the Department of Education, get rid of the Department of Energy or the EPA, things that the states were always intended to handle. So once 34 states pass that resolution, the states will choose their delegations, they're called commissioners, and they'll send them to the convention. And when they get there, those folks will decide the rules of the convention. Likely they'll operate just like a legislature. Most of the people who come will be legislators. There's something called Mason's rules. About 70% of the legislatures use them, kind of like Robert's rules of order, just kind of how you generally run a legislative body. They will then debate amendments. And when you get 26 states, a majority of states, to agree on an amendment, then that amendment becomes a suggestion and it gets sent out to the states for ratification. And it takes 3/4 of states to ratify.
So there was a lot of stuff to unpack in there. I think the one thing that was interesting to me is that at the beginning of the process, the terms of what you're going to be addressing is set.
That's correct.
And I think that also can kind of beat back against the, you know, the idea or the temptation that it could, you know, lead to ending, you know, amendments that none of us want to be ended, right? And the other part, too, so after this process is completed, whatever the proposed amendment is, still has to go to the states, has to go back to the states for ratification, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And to me, this is, I hate to say funny, but it's one of the funniest things that I get, because I don't know about you, but never in my life have I had somebody say, hey, Mark, there's a meeting, some people are going to get together, and then they're going to make some suggestions. And I thought, oh, my gosh, that's so scary. Like, people are going to talk and make suggestions. That's terrifying, right? So I think this is the critical dividing point that people have to understand. The convention has literally no power. Their job is just to make suggestions to the states, and then 38 states are going to debate that in their own legislatures, or all of them will debate it. 38 have to agree before it can be ratified.
All right, so we talked a little bit about some of the criticisms and concerns that largely come from the left about it. It's, you know, it's left and right in some cases, but largely from the left. Let's talk a little bit about some of the criticisms that come from the right. Obviously, there is a concern about, you know, losing amendments that, you know, political conservatives hold dear. But also, I've heard a lot of people say, oh, well, it's never going to happen. You know, why waste time on trying to do this when there's other things that, you know, you could be doing and things like that. So address that, the idea that this, you know, this could never happen anyway. So why waste time on it?
Yeah, I would say to those people, America could never happen. I mean, really, if you think about it, go back to the founding era and you've got this ragtag group of farmers and merchants that take up arms against the greatest empire ever to exist in human history. America could never happen. America couldn't win World War II against totalitarianism on multiple fronts around the planet. I mean, so America is a country of doing the impossible. The founders put it in here for a reason, because they knew the federal government would run away. They understood human nature, right? We're sinful, we're fallen creatures, and we like power, and so they knew DC would centralize power. And so I think America has always done the impossible. I was told that 9 years ago when I started this, nobody will listen to you, it'll never happen. Today, 19 states have already passed this, so we're way past the halfway mark, only 15 states to go. Important for conservatives to note, 31 states have both houses of their legislatures controlled by Republicans today. By the end of this cycle in November, I think that'll be 33. And I think we'll hit 34 in 2023 when Virginia flips its Senate. They already flipped their House of Delegates. And so, and by the way, the last vote in the House of Delegates, the last race to be decided, was a convention of states district captain who ran in Virginia Beach. There are 150 convention of states activists in her district. They made over 1,200 phone calls, and she won by 115 votes. So this is how I'm going to tie this thing into a bow for you. Convention of States activists are engaged in elections. They're engaged in election integrity efforts. They're engaged in the fight for life. They're engaged in school board races and the pushback against CRT all over the country. So even if you didn't get to convention, and I believe we will, we're building the largest grassroots army in the history of America, currently 5.2 million people involved.
All right, for people, there's people who want to get more information or get involved in the process. How can they, get in contact with the Convention of States, things like that? And also, too, I think it would be good to let people know who are the states that have signed up already for the Convention of States as well.
So how to get involved, go to conventionofstates.com, click on the petition, sign the petition. That'll automatically go to your state legislators, let them know that you're in support of Convention of States. And even if your state's already passed, that's important, because I said they're involved in all this other legislation in these states, all these other fights. So conventionofstates.com. And then, this is really important, not enough to sign the petition. We can all sign a petition. That's easy. It takes 5 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever. The key is click on the Take Action tab and volunteer, because it's your listeners that are going to save America. I'm not going to save America. You're not going to save America alone. We're just like them. We all got to do our part. And then there's a full map there, an interactive map. They can see the states that have passed, a whole bunch of other states that passed through just one house or another. But there's a full map there that'll list out all the states for them.
All right. Thank you so much, Mark Meckler, the president of Convention of States. Thank you for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for doing what you do. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Outlaws Radio Show on the FCB Radio Network.
All right, we are at CPAC Dallas, and we have a very special guest with us here today. His name is Christian Watson with Color Us United. Welcome to the show. How you doing, sir?
Good. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So we were talking a little bit before the show started about kind of the mission of your organization, Color Us United. And you were talking about pushing back against, quote unquote, wokeness in corporations. Talk a little bit about what you're seeing and also the efforts that you all are doing to kind of push back on that.
Well, we're seeing corporations in America, like Bank of America, like Citibank, and which is one of them, which is the focus of Color Us United's efforts, American Express, spend at least $1 billion annually, or even more in some cases, in advancing diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. What that means is they are advancing certain ideas within the workplace as essential for the workplace, as opposed to, advancing profit or things of that sort. And so in American Express's case, they have held seminars where they have told their employees to apologize for their whiteness. They have held seminars where they've had people affiliated with the Nation of Islam go on and talk to their employees about how capitalism is racist. They have had seminars where they have told about their quotas to encourage racial equity. And American Express is simply one out of many other institutions that are doing this kind of thing. And so Color Us United came in, and we are representing a few whistleblowers who left the company over things related to these policies. And we're really trying to push back and get people to realize this is where your money is going to. It's going to a sophisticated industry of people who have zero interest in actually servicing you and more interest in proselytizing their values to you and trying to inflict their worldview upon you under the guise of serving you. So it's double whammy. It's both deception and it's malintent, all in the same area. And so Color Us United is doing our best in the media through petitions. We launched a petition on American Express. We got about 14,000 signatures on it. And we're doing other things just to engage and let people know that, there is an alternative to this kind of nonsense.
So have you, in your efforts, have you gotten any response from either American Express or any of the other corporations that you're dealing with?
Yeah, so American Express, we released advertisements, and American Express has at various levels replied. I think there was a statement they made to Fox News, which is really a non-statement, and they were just trying to brush us off and say, this is not actually happening. American Express supports all of our employees. And, we've also had chatter that happens in the background that we really can't substantiate. But ultimately, there's been response. There's been a lot of pushback, a lot of quiet whispering. But there's also been a response amongst the employees. And obviously, for certain reasons, I can't go into that because some of these employees, a lot of them actually want to be anonymous. But we've had a lot of response from a lot of the employees. And there's a lot of people within the structure of American Express, a lot of ranking file people who want nothing to do with this kind of stuff. I'll give you another example. American Express wanted to make it seem as if they were fulfilling a quota. So what did they do? They basically had a quota for job interviews. They were going to interview X amount of minority persons for this job. The catch was, they already knew who was going to get the job. So they were interviewing people while already knowing who was going to get the job. So in a sense, they were deceiving people by giving them false hope that they were going to get the job, all because they wanted to seem racially diverse by interviewing black folks or Hispanic folks or Asian folks. It's a shame. It's where this has come to. It's where we've arrived at in our culture, unfortunately. And Color Rush United is a bullhorn to expose this.
We're talking with Christian Watson from Color Rush United. So, like you mentioned, a lot of these are in the diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. And I think to the average person, when they hear the people who don't know kind of the details and stuff, the response is, well, what's wrong with wanting diversity, right? What's wrong with wanting equity and inclusion? And in my view, I mean, it's, you know, diversity is a good thing. But how do you explain to people the difference between wanting to be diverse, which I believe is a good thing, and asking people to apologize for their whiteness?
Yeah, it's the knowledge problem, right? And this is a problem, you know, I study philosophy, and it's a problem that comes up in philosophy quite a bit. You know, on diversity, I like diversity too. You know, I like diversity of food. I like diversity of culture. You know, I like the feeling of I'm able to go into a town and try to speak broken Spanish to, you know, someone. I did that in my Uber driver last night. I like that. It makes me feel good because we are in a world of such vast and diverse people. But the leftist idea of diversity has little to do with having a diversity of cultures, of ideas, or of skills, and more to do with having a diversity, I say quote-unquote diversity, of identity. Now, it's very weird. How do you have a diversity of something if that's the only thing you're bringing to the table? The only thing they bring to the table is identity. And it's very hard to have true diversity when it's in a box and when it's in that one little label. So you may say, well, there are many different identities, but ultimately they're the same thing. There are many different cars, but they're kind of the same thing at their very core essence. So diversity really means having a variety of skills, perspectives in a certain area. So for real diversity, people can look at their churches. They go to church. There's a lot of diversity in a church, right? There's choir, typically. There's a pastor. Sometimes there's deacons. Sometimes there's ushers. There's people who hold out the offering plates, depending on what kind of church you go to. That's diversity. Diversity of role, skill, and, you know, of things that you do. Now, the leftist idea of diversity when applied to a church would say, okay, we have a lot of Christians in this church, but there's not enough Muslims. So they would go to a Baptist church and say, okay, we need equity, so where are the Muslims at? Where are the Jews at? Where are the underrepresented groups at? That's the complication, because no one would seriously go to a synagogue or a mosque or a church and expect to see other faiths predominantly represented. It makes no sense. But this is where this chaotic idea of diversity has gotten us to. It's gotten us to valuing aesthetics, appearances over substance. So diversity is not what they say it is. Let's go one further. Equity. Equity used to mean, it comes from the old French word in the 14th century. I can't pronounce it, but that's where it comes from. And essentially meant being fairness or being impartial. And there are different translations of the word that would add on to that, being impartial in accordance with the principles of justice. And justice throughout the Enlightenment and throughout the West has typically meant protecting people's rights, protecting what they already belong, what already belongs to them. Now, in the 80s, the term equity got flipped, and it became to mean giving resources to people on the basis of their group status, because apparently, according to this worldview, some groups are marginalized, some groups are not marginalized, some groups are worse off, some groups are not worse off. So what do? You distribute resources to correct the pains of those who are marginalized. Well, the problem with this is it's not really impartial, is it? You're basically picking favorites amongst the crowd. And you're not even doing so in a rational way. You're doing so in a way that denies the individuality of people in those groups, denies their individual life circumstances, and essentially says you are all the same because you look a certain way. Yeah, the same experience because you look a certain way. So the idea of equity also falls apart too. Now, inclusion is essentially a result of these two concepts. That's why it comes last, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Because inclusion would simply mean bringing people into the fray in accordance with the two previous principles. Right, so if we have the leftist idea of this, doesn't mean bringing more minorities into the fray or whatever, and doing so on the basis of how oppressed they are. It's diversity and equity in like a sentence. If we have the actual idea of this, it's going to be a natural process. I'm getting to meet people. Like, we're at CPAC right now. There's diversity at CPAC. There might be people that say, well, there's a bunch of conservatives. There's a lot of diversity in this crowd. If I were to survey 100 people that come to this event on their opinions on any given issue, I'll probably get 100 different answers. There is diversity. Maybe a kind of similar kind of answer, but most likely 100 different answers. There's diversity in this crowd, true diversity. And that happens naturally. You don't force it through a bureaucrat. You don't force it through a policy. You don't force it through coercion. It happens naturally, or it's not authentic. That's the difference between leftist diversity and diversity that Color Us United and people on the right generally advance.
So to kind of unpack that last point, so what you're saying is, you know, true diversity is diversity that happens naturally.
Absolutely.
That's what makes it authentic. And I guess I think one of the things that people kind of struggle with dealing with this issue is that we do know that there's real history there, right? We do know that there has been real injustices and things like that. And you know, nature hates a vacuum, right? So when someone says, here, I have the solution to address these issues, you know, it kind of gets into that. Because I think that there are some people who are kind of involved in this wokeism stuff. I don't think all of them are just complete lunatics. I think some of them are really genuinely, you know, trying to find something to address, you know, some of the real issues that still exist to this day. So what would be the counter response to that? Because there are some real issues, but you know, I share your view that a lot of this stuff that they're doing, and people who listen to this show, you know how I feel about progressivism generally, like a lot of the stuff that they're doing, I don't think it's actually in the long run in our best interest. They, you know, that's one of the reasons why I rail against intersectionality, right? Because in my view, we preach intersectionality, it ends up being black people who get put back in the back of the bus. So when we want our issues addressed, they say, oh, no, we have to worry about this group first and that group first and all of that. So what would be the counter response to people who are genuinely trying to, you know, address some of the real issues that exist?
Yeah, and really intersectionality hurts everybody, because, again, the moment you deny the true nature of who people are is the moment you essentially become anti-people. And that's what intersectionality is. It's anti-human. And it's a very strong statement to make, I understand, but it's generally how I believe. I have utter contempt for this kind of stuff. But anyway, there are a lot of real issues, right? There is an immense amount of poverty in a lot of African-American communities. There's an immense amount of fatherlessness. There's an immense amount of lack of resource access. There's a lot of things. But there's also an immense amount of things that are happening that are cause for hope. Black graduation rates are some of the highest they've been in history. That's a good thing, in my opinion. In certain educational contexts, like charter schools, African-American students tend to excel compared to their peers in public schools. It was a national survey. I was trying to think about what the survey was, but it'll come to me eventually. There is a lot of cause to be optimistic, but there's still a lot of work to do. And we have to ask ourselves a question. What are the source of these problems? A leftist would say that black poverty today can be sourced to redlining in every case. Well, it's interesting because a lot of the communities that were redlined many, many years ago are actually populated by other minorities as opposed to black people, which is interesting. I'm not going to say that redlining didn't have an effect on institutional wealth or on intergenerational wealth. It certainly did, but it's just interesting that a lot of those same areas don't have a lot of black people in them in the first place. It's interesting. So I think that we have to have a multifaceted view of history. There are things that happen, and there are factors perhaps that are still influencing things, but how greater are those factors compared to your own individual willpower? You know, I'm a child of a single mother. I didn't come from wealth. I grew up watching a mother work three jobs to support me and take care of me. And I didn't have the opportunities a lot of my peers in high school and college had. I had to present myself better than them. I had to work harder than them, because I knew that I had less of a margin for error than they did. When mommy and daddy are paying for everything, you have as much error as one. When your mom's out there busting her butt, working three jobs, you better get to school on time, you better do your homework, you better study, you better square up, or there's gonna be a problem. And that problem may not just be discipline, or it certainly would have been in my case, but it also would have been, you know, a lesser quality of life for me. So I had to put myself through school. I had to do a lot of things, and not a single person handed me anything. Not a single person gave me, I had to work for it. I had to make my own opportunities. And I'm doing okay now. I'm doing okay. I always want to do better, but I'm doing okay. And the fact is just this. Everyone can make their opportunities in life, even if they're in a situation that seems impossible. You have disabled people. You have all kind of people being able to make somewhat of a mark on this world. I don't think anyone in the United States of America has an excuse. They can say whatever they want to say, but if you really believe in the power of the human will, then you're going to be able to channel it to what you want to do. And actually, the activists are kind of an example of this. All these activists who scream and who rant and who rave, a lot of those people are professional activists. And they're making good livings off of being grievance mongers. I mean, that's kind of the principle of America. You can basically be whatever you want to be here, even if it's someone who pushes ideas that are against the ethos of the country. So I think that people have to stop viewing things on a systemic level, on an institutional level, and ask themselves the question, what can I do in my own life to make my situation better?
We're talking with Christian Watson from Color Rush United. And as we get ready to wrap up here, there's one thing I wanted to, that was in the news that we talked about on our show a couple episodes ago, that I wanted to get your opinion on. And I thought it was a perfect example of why, you know, I'm not a fan of virtue signaling. I think sometimes people misunderstand, you know, I'm not against virtue signaling because I don't think racism is a problem, or I don't think that we should talk about racism or that we should care about racism. That's not my view at all. I think a lot of these corporations, the woke corporations, when they participate in virtue signaling, it's actually to make people feel good while they're still not really doing anything. So to that point, it was a story in the news recently about Berkshire Hathaway, who were discriminating against African-American potential home buyers. And I found that to be very interesting, considering the fact that Berkshire Hathaway is ran by Warren Buffett, who is one of the biggest, wokest, liberal billionaires in the country. So I wanted to get your thoughts on it.
So and it's interesting because a lot that are accused of discriminating against blacks, black people for homes, are that's oftentimes mistaken, because a lot of times, a lot of those companies will actually lower their standards so that certain populations that have like lower kinds of credit can go ahead and buy homes. And people will think that if they don't do that, they're discriminating. We change the standard many different times. Now, in this case, if they were actually like discriminating against people who are qualified, that's horrible. I mean, it's bad. I would ask Warren Buffett. I'd ask Warren Buffett, why is he doing that? If there are people who can pay their mortgages, why aren't you, and they have good character, good history, why aren't you giving them mortgages? Wow. I'm not surprised, though. Why should you be surprised? Ultimately, wokeism is the highest form of racism, because it's racism justified in a pseudo-historical intellectual way, right? Oh my gosh, these groups have been oppressed by colonialism, by patriarchy, by X, Y, and Z ill over here. Therefore, we need a systemic response to fix that. Therefore, let us help you by implementing diversity, equity, and inclusion in your institutions, by implementing social justice, things of that sort. That's essentially a racist idea, because what happens is you begin thinking that some groups are better off than other groups, right? Asians, for example. A lot of people who talk about social justice won't mention Asians, even though Asians are a minority. Why is this the case? Because Asian Americans have a high level of achievement. They beat everyone. They beat white Americans, they beat black Americans. They have a high level of achievement in many different categories. And that's an uncomfortable truth that no one wants to grapple with. Why is that so? And they're viewed off at, they're viewed as white adjacent is really what they're viewed as. So this is what Asians are viewed as by the woke people. They're viewed as people who benefit from using the idea of a white privilege or whiteness as a social currency, even though they're not actually white. So when you get deep into this stuff, it really just becomes how painstakingly obvious how racist it is. So a consequence of racism is racist behavior.
You know, one of my issues with wokeism in general is that, you know, they talk a lot about allyship, but to me, an ally is somebody who stands next to you, not someone who stands in front of you. And what ends up happening is a lot of white progressives are like, here, let me save you. And they end up crowding us out. So let everybody know, man, how to follow you on social media if they want to get more information about your organization and all that good stuff.
Colorist United, you can go to colorsunited.org. And my information is on the contact page there. If you want to follow me personally on social media, you can go to officialcwatson@gmail.com. Not my email. Official C. Watson on Twitter, and I'm right there, and you'll see everything else that I have there as well. So,
all right, thanks so much, man, for coming on the show, spending time with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yo, what's up? Bring the noise right here, Chuck D, Public Enemy number one. You are tuned in the Outlaws Radio Show.
Yeah, this is Chris Gotti, and you're listening to the number one radio show, The Outlaws. You heard me? Adventure Music supports Chris Gotti. Go check him out.
What's up, y'all? It's your girl, comedian and actress Coco Brown, and you're listening to the Outlaws Radio Show.
Yo, what's good? It's your boy SNMJT, and I'm with Outlaws.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan. And we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome back to the Outlaw Radio Show.
All right. Welcome back. This has been an eventful day, and it was very interesting because when we first got here, like, it started off slow, and because you guys are hearing the condensed version of the show, but we've been here for a couple of hours, and at the very beginning, we were like, are we going to have anybody to talk to? And then it just became a bum rush right after, and we had some really, really good conversations, really, really good interviews. I think it's something that people can learn, whether you agree or disagree or whatever, but it's always good to have information and to have as much information as possible. But I can say this, and I know Robin agrees with me, the most powerful interview that we did today was Jim Peterson and Lieutenant Colonel Barry Bridger, I think that's how you pronounce that last name. It left me speechless just to kind of hear his story and all of those things. That was very moving.
That was, you know what? It seems like a lot of people are tapping into my emotions as of the last few months. So I'm like, I don't know what it is, but that was definitely a moving story. Just little simple questions that we were asking him, but his responses were just powerful. Like, he was saying so less, but so much in those few words. And it's just like, dang, reality check on some things. You know, there's, I think I just had multiple levels of growth after just having that one interview.
Yeah, absolutely. I think his response to the last question that you asked really stood out the most. To hear a guy who was in an orphanage, who was a prisoner of war, who had both of his arms, you know, pulled out of the socket, you know what I mean? And to hear him still have a positive perspective on life, I think says so much, should say so much to everybody listening. I know it said a lot to us being the people doing the interview, but I think it should show perspective that, first of all, everyone has a story, right? Everybody has been through something or going through something, but also how your perspective on what you go through is as important, if not more important, than what you actually went through, because your perspective is what helps you get through it, you know? So to see a guy like that, who had been through all of the things that he had been through, to still have a positive outlook on life, you know, his response to your question, like, almost made me choke up a little bit.
I bet that was tough for you, Darvio. But that was real tough for you as a man that doesn't like to express emotions or show emotions. He was like, dang, like, he almost made me choke up, like, low-key. So, but he definitely, like I said, you know, he did have that, you know, he had that effect on me as well. I mean, I can't even imagine the things that he went through, but for, like you said, for him to be so positive, it really says a lot. And, you know, it, like, again, you know, once again, as I said, you know, it's a it's an example of, to show you how to change in life, you know what I mean? So we all walk around miserable and upset about things that we've been through, and bitter and angry towards the world, and, you know, when ultimately you can just change the perspective of what it was.
Absolutely. That was powerful stuff. So thank you so much for listening to this episode. Thank you to everybody who joined us today. We have another big day tomorrow. We are already getting booked up for tomorrow today. So we're going to be bringing you some more interviews tomorrow. So we are out of here. We'll see you tomorrow. Peace.
The FCB Radio Network. First-class broadcasting worldwide.